What is going on, my people? How we doing? As I record this, early evening, I guess you'd consider it, about 6:45 on Thursday, we are officially under a week away for the NFL season. If I was recording this next week at the same time on Thursday, there'd be it might be in the second half. Chiefs, Texans. So football, even in these weird times, is, you know, back in the air. We'll use as a loose term. It's urgent. I haven't even watched Hard Knocks yet this week, and it's late Thursday night. So maybe I'll do that tonight after I bang out this show. But we still got a lot going on, and I'm ready. I just football on my TV, NFL football. I guess the SEC and the Big 12 and some of those schools don't start playing for a couple more weeks, which is weird. Usually this weekend is kind of a big blowout football weekend. Remember last year was Auburn, Oregon, Justin Herbert. This year was going to be Alabama, USC. I think next week, I was actually supposed to go next week, Oregon, Ohio State, but Pac-12 canceled, started the Big Ten. So no football for me. Just hanging out and drinking, I guess, in Corona, because there's not really many places to go and no Vegas this weekend. But I got some things to talk about today. I want to dive into Josh Rosen off the top. I have some thoughts on the whole situation. Adam Schefter had a report today that the Dolphins are looking to trade him. Belichick officially names Cam Newton. And I think it's very symbolic, the Cam Newton deal that he made, signed him for $500,000, of what good teams do and what bad teams do. And some are patient, some aren't. And the patient teams consistently win in the league. Then there was something that I woke up to today. I think it's called a Woj bomb. He tweeted that Steve Nash, I mean, I'm a huge fan of Steve Nash as a basketball player, was named the head coach of the Brooklyn Nets. Obviously, the Brooklyn Nets now have Kevin Durant. They actually had him all season, but he has a torn Achilles. And it got me thinking. I was on a jog this morning. I'm like, you know, how can I make this kind of a football angle? And then I realized, like, is there ever a chance now, Jason Kidd, who was, you know, growing up in Northern California, he was like my dad's favorite player. We were big. He was a Cal season ticket holder. Jason Kidd became a head coach. Now Steve Nash. I mean, these guys are Hall of Famers. Could a guy like Peyton Manning or Drew Brees ever become a head coach? And I wrote down some reasons why that probably won't take place. And then, of course, the Middlecoff mailbag, at John Middlecoff. I'll bang out some of your questions. For those of you that have, I greatly appreciate it. For those of you that haven't and like the show, it helps the sales team, helps the buzz of the podcast for the algorithms, things that I can't quite understand. I just know it works. If you could please go to the iTunes 3 and Out individual podcast. I know some of you listen on the Herd's stream or on his podcast. Subscribe to my podcast, which is the same show, but it's got its own podcast. Leave a review, and I greatly appreciate it. Okay, let's dive into Josh Rosen. And let's just get some things out on the table. I think we're all somewhat products of the way we were raised and definitely some initial professional experiences we have. I grew up with a father who was actually older. He was, you know, he passed away a couple years ago. He was in his late 70s, had me after he was 40. He grew up very old school, obviously when you're born in the 40s. His father fought in World War II. His brother died in Vietnam. He was a farmer, obviously loved sports, you know, where I get it. But very old school values. You either showed up on time or you didn't. You either got good grades or you didn't. It was very black and white. There was no middle ground. We didn't really do excuses where I came from. And then once I got, that's how I grew up my entire life. I still to this day get paranoid about being late, which helped me once I started working in football. Because football, like my environment growing up, same deal. You either get a first down or you don't. You either make the tackle or you don't. It's, you know, it's very black and white. You either win the game or you don't. It's why as I've transitioned to the media, it's a little fluffier, you know. I grew up in an old school private sector business home. Then I went to football in college in the NFL, and there wasn't many hypothetical middle grounds. I mean, some came from me. I gave some excuses. They just didn't fly. That there was a no victimhood mentality, a no bullshit mentality in my home. And then when I worked at Fresno State and I worked in Philly, you either did what you were told and got the job done or you didn't. There was no middle ground. Now, listen, sometimes something happened and we all can make excuses for individual circumstances, right? We're late to something because our car broke down. We got bad grades this quarter in college because our girlfriend dumped us. We didn't get the first down because the right tackle slipped. Like, there are individual instances in life where it's okay to make an excuse, where it's a believable excuse, where it actually, the excuse you're making is true. But I do fundamentally believe that if you have that mentality in life, you're more likely to succeed. Now, there are going to be people that have different type personalities and that were raised different that are going to think different. And we're just going to have to agree to disagree. Because I know this, I plan on raising my unborn children. I'll be a little different. But there are going to be some basic principles of life that I gained from someone that was born in the 40s that my child that will be born probably in the next decade, you think, I'm in my mid-30s, will also carry with them. Because I do think there are things that last forever. And one thing I saw today, Adam Schefter tweeted that Josh Rosen is on the trade block. And all I saw on social media, and I think you hear this a lot when anyone talks about Josh Rosen, he got the raw end of the deal. He is getting screwed. It is not his fault. I've seen this over and over and over. And you know what? I'd go, getting drafted by Arizona, when Vance Joseph was your head coach, when your offensive line was pitiful, and you got thrown into a game, which many people in the NFL think that Sam Bradford in that game might have just said, I'm over it. I'm out. And he got thrown in, remember, of a game late in the fourth quarter. Shitty way to start your career, which is the case for a lot of rookies. It's not a seamless transition. Now, he went on to start 13 games that rookie year, and it was ugly. It was bad. But he got 13 regular season games. Kingsbury comes. And I didn't appreciate the way they handled it. I thought it was a little bush league at times, the way they treated the situation of a guy that, from my knowledge, wasn't a bad human being, was a good teammate, was doing everything humanly possible to attempt to be a good football player. But the NFL is a business, and they decided to draft Kyler Murray. Pretty clear after 1 year, right decision. We all would have made it. But unless you're in the Rosen family, I don't think you'll meet a human being that didn't say that ultimately, whether they handled the lead up to it correctly or not, that the Cardinals didn't make the right decision. Here's where my pity for Josh Rosen ends. And I'm someone that loved Josh Rosen coming out. I had him as my number two quarterback in that class. And I was wrong. I had Sam Darnold, then him. Then, you know, probably I'd have to go back and look. You know, Josh Allen. I didn't like Josh Allen. I didn't like Lamar Jackson. Clearly, Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen, Lamar definitely, and even Josh, run circles around Josh Rosen. He is not as good a player as those guys. Not even debatable. Same with Baker Mayfield. He's done way more in the league. Now, Baker's got to put up or shut up this year, but that's another story. Once you get traded for a second-round pick, though, as he did to Miami, who was not very good, my pity ends there. Because it's not like they gave up nothing, so they had nothing invested in the guy. They gave a second-round pick for Josh Rosen. They gave him the opportunity to beat out Ryan Fitzpatrick. Do you hear what I just said? Ryan Fitzpatrick. I didn't say Ben Roethlisberger. I didn't say Tom Brady. Hell, I didn't say Dak Prescott or Jimmy Garoppolo. I said Ryan Fitzpatrick, who, from all accounts, probably one of the smartest. I think he has the highest Wonderlic score in the history of the NFL. Smart Ivy League guy. Very likable guy. I'm a Ryan Fitzpatrick fan. But Josh Rosen, who was the 10th pick in the draft, and when he came out, now the league quickly changed. He's not very mobile. But old school pocket quarterback, the immense arm talent, couldn't beat him out. When they had just traded a second round pick for him, they had got Fitzpatrick for nothing. He was just your classic bridge quarterback. Pay him $3 or $4 million. They weren't that invested in Ryan Fitzpatrick. Josh Rosen was given the opportunity to beat him out and could not do it. And then when Josh Rosen got his opportunity to play at different times for the Miami Dolphins, he threw one touchdown and five picks. You'd be like, well, the Miami Dolphins were terrible. No one could throw any touchdowns. Ryan Fitzpatrick threw 20 and 13 interceptions. So he had his opportunity while it was short-lived. Sometimes opportunity, you never know when they're going to come. He was drafted 10 overall, so he already got made a bunch of money. And the Arizona situation, out of his control, turned shitty really quick. Nothing he could do. But once he got to Miami, they invested a second-round pick for him, and all he had to beat out was Ryan Fitzpatrick. To me, it goes on him. Do you know what it turns out? Now, again, his story's not completely written. He's in his early 20s. He could still resurrect his career down the line. But as of right now, his failure is on him. He had the opportunity. He was around Brian Flores. He was around that offense, the staff, the teammates, every single day to make an impression, to get his opportunity, and he could not do it. Obviously, once they draft Tua Tagovailoa, he was done. It was over. But it was over way before this draft. He had his chance last season. You think if Sam Darnold or Josh Allen was, let's just say one of those two guys had been, instead of at three, the Jets had taken Sam Darnold, or at seven, the Buffalo Bills had taken Josh Allen, it was Josh Rosen went in one of those spots. So at 10, the Arizona Cardinals got Sam Darnold or got Josh Allen. You don't think they beat out Ryan Fitzpatrick? Because I do. You don't think that maybe they changed the direction of the franchise? Maybe. I think there's a decent chance. Josh Rosen clearly did not. So when you see that Josh Rosen got the short end of the stick, I agree in Arizona. Listen, we all have bad days, bad moments, a bad year, things that are out of our control. But eventually in football, you can't make excuses. You either got the job done or you didn't. And he, you know what turns out? He's probably just not very good. And people like me that liked him were just wrong. He is not, and the league has dramatically changed. He can't move with his feet. And his career is now circling the drain. It really is. I didn't see it coming. I actually, you know, applauded when they drafted him 10 overall. But the overall narrative that this is some royal screw job and he was handed pocket twos, and it's just not true. Because the moment he got traded to Miami, the previous situation was irrelevant. It was his time to shine, and he couldn't do it. So when you see these people make excuses for him, just know that it's on Josh Rosen, nobody else, that his career in Miami's coming to an end. Okay, let's dive into patience. Because I think that is a word that I know that I was not blessed with. And I would say the first 30 years of my life, I was as impatient of a human being as you could possibly be. And I was always, and we've talked about this before, I think that most great business mentors, if you ask people how to make money or what to invest in, the number one thing I always got growing up, and it kind of goes out one ear, out the other, until you actually experience, and I went to Cal Poly, and we had this motto called learn by doing. Kind of cheesy, I always thought. And then the older I get, I'm just like, I take a lot of pride in learn by doing. I learned the best. Not by reading. I learned by getting out there and doing something. I'm not a huge theory guy. Now, I have a lot of theories, and I like talking about theories, but in terms of actually putting something to action, I just do it. And if I fail at it, I'll fail at it, and then adjust from there. But anyone successful with any amount of money will tell you the best deals they've made in real estate, in hiring, in purchasing other businesses, in whatever, even buying their own home, is being patient. And it's so much easier said than done. And when I, like 5 or 6 years ago, the rent, you know, halfway through the bull market, so probably like 2014, 2015, my rent in Emeryville, California, which is on the other side of the Bay Bridge, so not in San Francisco, it's basically right next to Berkeley, it's between Berkeley and Oakland. And I got a deal. I wanted to live by myself. And maybe it was 2013 I originally moved in and started like $1,500 a month back in 2013. And by about 2015, the tech, you know, scene in the Bay Area was just humming. it was just insane home prices and rent prices. I wasn't in an area that was rent controlled. My rent was going to like almost $2,500 for a pretty shitty apartment. And I said, this is nuts. I gotta buy a place. And I'm not a big city guy anyway, in the sense of I like going into the city and not necessarily San Francisco anymore. You couldn't pay me to go in there right now. But just in general, I lived in San Francisco for 1 year back when it was cool. And it had some good parts, and there were a lot of babes, and it's fun to party and everything. But I hate not being able to park. Like, I like my space. I grew up in the suburbs. I like living in the suburbs. I like green. I like playing golf. I like to be able to breathe. I like to be able to park. And so I'm like, I got to buy a place. And I've never bought a place before. And the market was crazy. You had to bid, like, if a selling price was like $450,000 for a condo, if your bid wasn't $500,000, they wouldn't even call you back. It was crazy. I remember trying to explain it to my dad, and he was like, this is nuts. And I had friends that had bought places in the city, and they were like, you just got to do this. It's hard to wrap your head around. And I finally found a cool little condo complex. It's where I actually live now. And it was this place on the first floor. And there are three levels in where I live. But the place on the first floor is actually on the opposite side of where I'm sitting right now. I can see the place. And I'd put an offer in on it, and I was in like the final couple spots. And I was like, you know, I remember looking down at my phone and seeing that there wasn't any, I didn't have any cell phone service. This is great. This is how, you know, guys, millennials think. I'm like, this is not going to fly. Wait, I'm not going to be able to text. This is crazy. And something was a little off, but it was a pretty good deal relative to how crazy the real estate market is. For whatever reason, I ended up not getting it. And then I was like, I'm not going to be able to find a place to live. I'm going to be paying like $3,000 in rent. This is insane. And then a couple months later, I get a place in the same building on the third floor, which I've learned there's been some plumbing issues in this place. It doesn't impact me because, as the old saying goes, shit flows downhill. So we've had some places flood. And one of the places that flooded in this building was the condo that I originally wanted to get and ended up not getting. And they've had major problems. I haven't had one issue. My place is incredible. You know why? On the third floor, if you're ever going to live in a complex, or if you're ever going to buy a place, renting's a little different. If you're going to buy, you got to be on the top floor if you're going to buy condos. You have to. It saves you so many potential headaches. It's a game changer. Now, I was forced into the patience there because if they would have said, we'll accept your offer, I would have taken it. But it was the best thing that ever happened to me. It really was. And now that I play the stock markets, I see sometimes like living and dying on a given day. Like, I'm not Gordon Gekko. Just take a deep breath. The next day, it'll go down and then you can buy it at a cheaper price. It happens all the time. So patience to me is something that I, as I've gotten older and gotten a lot better at it, it's something that I cognitively think about a lot. Like, John, take a deep breath. John, you're not to be in a huge rush. It's really helped me just operate in life, let alone in any business dealings that I have. But the people that I admire in the NFL are by far the most patient people. And I don't know if there's ever been a more patient human being in the history of the NFL than Bill Belichick. Bill Belichick, remember when, and listen, I was believing the buzz. Like, I think he likes Stidham, man. He's all in on Stidham. Clearly he wasn't, because if he was all in on Stidham, he wouldn't have signed Cam Newton. No chance. Because at the end of the day, Belichick, like, Pete Carroll's big thing is always compete. And I do think he believes that. And I think anyone that played for him, especially that original LOB crew, those practices were crazy. Anyone that followed the USC teams in the 2000s, that if you went to a USC practice, it was a war zone of all these five-star guys just fighting over playing time. Remember, for it didn't get like in vogue up until this last like decade for young guys to play. Like, most guys, when I was growing up, definitely in the 90s and even the early 2000s, like, you had to be a junior or senior to play on a great team. It was. I vividly remember, like, in the late 90s, like, it was a big deal for, like, a sophomore to be starting on a top five team. By the time Pete had that thing rolling, you looked at some of Pete's teams, he had, like, freshmen all over the place playing. Best guys played. Always compete. And then Urban Meyer, and think about Nick Saban, how quickly he changed. and all the best teams started playing young guys, and it's become very normal. Look at the Heisman Trophy. All these sophomores, juniors, and freshmen, definitely freshmen and sophomores, can win it now, and which is cool, which is how it should be. But Belichick got his starting quarterback. He just named him on Thursday, Cam Newton, for $550,000, I think. Now, you could say, well, he just took a flyer on him. Well, to me, if he loved Jared Stidham, he wouldn't have taken a flyer. He knew Cam Newton was out there. And Corona was working to his benefit because no one could put Cam Newton through a physical. And now Cam Newton's a starting quarterback. And from everything we've read and all these little videos that come out, it sure seems like Bill Belichick really likes Cam Newton. And think about the way they did business forever. And you can nitpick them like, oh, they should have done this, they should have done that. They went to 9 Super Bowls in a decade. How many times did we ever go, you know what? God, Belichick traded 2 first-round picks for Jalen Ramsey. That blew up in his face. Never did. He missed on draft picks. Everybody does. You're only going to hit 50% of your first-round picks, let alone, you know, second, thirds, and fourths. But there was a consistent reason why that franchise never crumbled. It never fell apart. Obviously, Tom Brady played a huge role in it. But their roster, definitely over the last decade, they never were that financially in these weird spots. And the one time over the last really 10 years, he put all his chips in the table for a guy that he didn't. And think about this. When he was aggressive in free agency, like when he originally got Welker, when he put all the chips in the table for Stephon Gilmore, he went with guys in his own division that he saw, you know, if you play like Gilmore 4 years for the Bills, he played him 8 times. Welker, he's playing him every year, twice a year. It's not like a one-off game and he sees the guy once every however many years. He saw that guy a lot. You know, so I think it played a big role in his understanding of being able to consistently compete because he was patient. Look at some of the other moves this summer by patient teams. And I see it like I was around Howie Roseman. He can be an impatient person. Now, I think he's changed a lot more when I talk to him now. But when I was around him, he was really young. He was just, he still is, just, you know, an intense, just go-getter. But when he does business, he doesn't operate like that. He takes his time. He lets it come to him. They didn't do Jalen Ramsey for 2 ones and a 2. They got Darius Slay for a 3 and a 5. I think Minnesota and Rick Spielman is one of the best GMs in the league. He got Yannick Ngakoue for a second-round pick. That pick, they'll probably be in the playoffs. That pick's going to be in the 50s. He got him to take a $6 million pay cut to come to his team. When you get impatient, and listen, we're all, at the end of the day, like a GM is just a huge fan that is running a team. Now, he has a lot more knowledge probably about the sport, but deep to his core, he's a huge fan. So we all want good players, right? And we all, when we get the axe or the ability to get this guy or get that guy, it's not easy for them too. But there's a reason that the Vikings and Howie, they're going to the playoffs all the time. And their rosters are always in position to compete. Because they're not impatient. And Belichick is the bar at that. Just, I think the Niners have really changed their franchise with Kyle Shanahan on patience. Last year, they traded back one spot and still got the guy. They did it even when they screwed up the Solomon Thomas pick. They traded back one spot with Mitch Trubisky. They just aren't in a huge rush. And just listen, when you are patient, even if you make the wrong move, for example, the 49ers, when they traded back one spot to get Solomon Thomas, they still acquired a 3rd and a 4th round pick. And those guys are on the team now and they use those assets to get other players. But when, and I say this all the time about the draft, you have to let the draft come to you because you have to understand the market. It's no different than real estate. You can't be buying an $800,000 home for $1.5 million. But you sure as hell can buy a $500,000 home for $250,000. And that's what Belichick has made a living off of. Same with Howie Roseman for a long period of time now. Same with now Rick Spielman. And I admire these guys, and I'm still trying to learn it. And I would imagine anyone, and there's a balance, right? There's, you can't just be lethargic with everything, but you have to be able to take a deep breath and be okay to miss out on it. Because wouldn't you say the best deals are when you're okay to walk away? And just because you walk away doesn't mean you don't want that deal or don't want that player. But you just know, you know, this doesn't pencil for me. And when you can have that conviction, in sports it's hard because you're walking away from a guy like, God, our first-round pick's going to be pretty good. And they're calling your bluff, and you're like, I don't think anyone else is offering them a first-round pick. But I think my offer with a second-round pick is the best offer. And if you can wait it out long enough, Minnesota did, got themselves a star pass rusher. Howie Roseman did, got himself a star corner. Belichick did, got himself a former MVP starting quarterback for $500,000. I mean, that's incredible value. That if Cam Newton is good for Bill Belichick, you could argue that's one of his greatest personnel moves when you factor in how much he's paying him, the return on investment. If they win 8 or 9 games and compete to make a wild card, $550,000, hard pressed in just a 1-year situation to find a better example of Bill Belichick and value and just knowing the market and understanding what other people don't. And so I commend all these guys, and there's a reason teams win and other teams consistently lose. Okay, let's dive into Steve Nash, who just became the head coach of the Nets. And the first thing I did this morning after my jaw kind of hit the floor, I'm like, Steve Nash is going to become the head coach? I Googled how much he made in his career. $145 million, and that's just on the court. And he was a pretty marketable athlete there for a while. I would imagine made a couple $100 million. I think he got a bad divorce, but still, I don't think money's the issue. He had been with the Warriors the last couple years. He's close with Steve Kerr, and I'm always fascinated by people. Like, I don't have enough money where I could just not do anything the rest of my life. Like, I have to keep working, right? Now, granted, I don't even view what I do as working. I never really have. I've always really, really enjoyed it. Now, back when I worked in football, I pulled long hours. Even to this day, I mean, I'm still going. It's, you know, it's almost 8 o'clock. It's like, I know people, and I can't relate that 8 o'clock and you can't wait to get out of the door at 5 o'clock. I knew I couldn't do that. I knew I could not function that way. And so I've had to pave my own path, right? But I still, the actual money, like, if I ever get to the point where I look in a bank and there's just enough money where I don't have to do shit, will I still be driven to do? We'll have to cross that bridge when I come to it. But I've been around a lot of people that make a lot of money and aren't driven by money at all, because Andy Reid could have retired a long time ago. Still cranking. Just got a contract extension. I'll promise you this. Andy Reid ain't doing it for the money. I think you see it a lot with coaches. Belichick, the money, Nick Saban. The money in coaching is so insane right now. If they didn't like football or basketball or whatever, they would not keep coaching. Like, John Calipari is not doing this for the money. Ego is the fame. It's for the love of the sport, first and foremost, or you could not keep doing it. Why is Jeff Bezos still working at Amazon? What else does he have to prove? It's just, some people are just driven. Now, I've met some people that are driven by money. I actually haven't met that many people that are driven strictly by money. I don't know that many people like in the financial world. Maybe there's more that way. Because that to me, I like stocks. I actually like them more by the day as I gain more money. But that would get a little boring to me and be a little hollow. And when Steve Nash, and I know Jason Kidd like 7-8 years ago when he first became a head coach, my first thought was like, wow, for this guy to do this. Now, both of them, if you remember, Jason Kidd got the Nets job. They had just traded for Kevin Garnett. They had Darren Williams. I think they had Paul Pierce in that trade too. Like, they were supposed to be really good. Obviously, they have Kevin Durant with the Nets right now, who, in my opinion, when he's healthy, probably the best player in the world. So if you have Kevin Durant, like, it's a good job. Now, Kyrie, a little bit of a wild card, but I understand Steve Nash, Jason Kidd, it ain't about the money because they had an unlimited amount. They do not need to do this. So I fully respect that mindset of, they just want to do it. Then I started thinking today, like, it happens, and it's happened a lot in basketball over the years. Famous, especially the last, 20, with these famous guys becoming head coaches. And I'm not just saying fame, I'm talking rich, because that's the game changer, right? They don't have to keep working. And could it ever happen in football? Because if I was an NFL owner and Peyton Manning and I needed a coach, like if I was John Morrow this summer, And Peyton Manning's like, I'm in. I'd hire him on the spot. How much? 5 years? 10 million a year? 50 million? You're my head coach. It would, one, I'd believe that he could get it done. Two, I would just, it'd be worth it for the buzz and the my fan base. It'd be awesome. Like, in football, coaches matter a lot. Probably more, way more than basketball, obviously, on the court. But all off the court, like, they're really famous. All of our coaches in the NFL and even the top ones in college are really, really famous and obviously make a lot of money. But I started writing down some things. I'm like, I don't know. Even if that guy was semi-interested, and we've seen, like, remember Marshall Faulk, Deion Sanders, they're like, I want to be a head coach. Like, well, would you start being a position coach? And they say no. Too rich, too famous, which fine. But I don't think you'll ever see a quarterback make that transition. And the number one thing I wrote down, and the reason why, is in basketball, when Steve Nash takes this job, if Kevin Durant is healthy, and I've seen some internet videos, he sure looked pretty healthy a couple months ago, you're a lock to make the playoffs. A 100% lock to make the playoffs. And if Kyrie can just function, you're going to be really good. Like, you are going to borderline compete to win the East right away. You're a lock to win 45 games. We're in the NFL. Even if your team is really good or talented on paper, you're not a lock to do shit. The Cowboys on paper were fantastic last year, went 8-8. It's hard to win in the NFL, even when you have really good players. Injuries happen at a much higher rate than in basketball. You can't just show up. Obviously, if you're a terrible coach, and even if you try, it might not be good enough. But even if you were Peyton Manning, and you tried hard for whatever reason, it might not mesh. It might not work. The other thing is, in the NFL, these star players in basketball force coaches out, like they just did with the Nets. It happens a lot, right? There aren't usually like, oh, Russell Wilson or Patrick Mahomes, the job with them at quarterback open. You know the job that's usually open? Like the New York Giants, the Carolina Panthers. Terrible jobs. Jobs that no one really wants. The Browns, you could argue, was a little unique, but you looked at it, you went, well, I don't even know if Baker's any good, right? So I would say, first and foremost, it is way more difficult. If you give me Kevin Durant, I'm a minimum locked, if he's healthy, 45 games. In football, I'm not guaranteed to win like six, even if my team's good. It's just so hard week in, week out. The parity in the league is so different. Also in basketball, and this is a big reason, like, the sport, I think, has fallen off these last 3 or 4 years. The effort in the regular, and I saw it firsthand with the Warriors. When the Warriors tried the year before Kevin Durant came, they won 73 games. Now, they were really skilled and everything, but I watched all 82 games that season. I swear to God, they gave max effort in 80. Like, I'm talking max start-to-finish effort. I was going to a lot of those games. I was leaving when the fourth quarter started. They were destroying people because they approached every game like a football game. I watched them since. Once Kevin Durant came, they barely tried in the regular season. The regular season, I mean, is hit or miss on effort. In football, every single game, you're getting a team's best shot. Now, they may not be good or not, but that team's going to try. So it is, every game is stressful. The second thing, the hours in football relative to basketball. You think Steve Kerr is working long hours? Seriously? I mean, I promise you he's not. Now, that doesn't mean, like, I think Eric Spoelstra, Brad Stevens, Nick Nurse, some of these coaches are kind of wired like football guys. Mike Malone, the Denver Nuggets coach. Doc Rivers plays a lot of golf. You know who doesn't ever play golf during the regular season? Once football starts, football coaches. They don't touch their golf clubs. They grind. Pat Hill, who I used to work for at Fresno State, long story short, this super rich guy in the Valley, kind of the Fresno area, most successful almond farmer around, has this podcast. He built a podcast studio at his, basically like his warehouse. He just wanted to start a podcast for farmers. He had Pat Hill on the podcast. And he asked Pat, what was it like to work for Bill Belichick? He said, what about the hours? And Pat kind of laughed, and then he got serious. So it was the craziest thing I ever experienced. And this was in the 90s in Cleveland. He said the hours went like this. Now, this is Belichick, but I work for Andy Reid. I don't think the hours are that much different. Sleeps in the office. Grinder. 6 a.m. to 2 a.m. Monday through Thursday. Obviously, you're traveling on the weekends, eight out of the 16 weeks. Even the weeks you're there, you're still practicing on Friday, then walkthroughs on Saturday, so it's not like you get Friday or Saturday off. But Monday through Thursday, so Monday night, Tuesday night, Wednesday night, Thursday night, 6 a.m. till 2 a.m. Say that out loud. I couldn't pull that off. Now, in Philly, as the personnel staff, the coaches were there, like, give or take, given those hours, maybe not 2 a.m., but probably like 6 to 10 or 11. I was like 6 to 8. And then when I was working for the Eagles, I'd get a workout at like 8. But the hours were nuts. I mean, crazy. And it's just, you're watching film all day. It's hard. I mean, it's not easy. And basketball's not like that. Basketball is not a grind like that at all. So there is a grinding element that Peyton Manning, or Drew Brees, for example, that they know as a player because they approached it like a coach. You see some of these stories that have come out about Peyton Manning and Tom Brady over the years, how they communicate with... Why did Peyton Manning like Adam Gase? Because he could text him at midnight and he'd get an immediate answer. That's why Peyton Manning loved Adam Gase, because he was crazy like him. They would be talking plays at like 5 a.m. to midnight. It never ended. Basketball's not like that. Because I know I need a big bucket. I'm going to Kevin Durant. What are we going to run? Give it to Kevin Durant. Get the hell out of the way. What did Doug Collins say on the famous Michael Jordan shot? What'd you run, Doug? I told him in the huddle, get the ball to Michael and get the fuck out of the way. That's what he said to the press. 1990, when they beat Cleveland. The Craig Ellis shot. That was the play. Get the ball to Michael and get the F out of the way. I don't know why I didn't swear. I could. I just try to keep it. Don't try to swear too much on this podcast. Or overkill. But, and the last thing. Basketball, really a 5 or 6 month a year job. Right? Whenever the season starts till the finals. You don't have to do anything with the draft. You don't have to work. The combine goes on like during the season. It's not that difficult for a coach. Your GM actually does a lot. Steve Nash, Sean Marks is the guy going to do all the personnel. Now, I'm not saying he's not going to have an input or thoughts in it, but as a coach, even if you aren't the one drafting the players, you are still playing a major role. You're going to the combine. You are if you're not going to pro days, you're having all these players come to you. You obviously play a huge role in free agency. You're watching a ton of tape on guys around the league that you could sign. There's just way more players. There's just way more work to do. And listen, I think it would be incredible if Peyton Manning, a Drew Brees, a Favre, I know Favre wouldn't, but you get my drift. I'm just talking an all-time famous name, became a coach. Because we've seen it with some GMs now, right? Elway, Ozzie Newsome forever, John Lynch here. And it's cool. And I've talked to people with the Niners. They're like, I'm blown away by how hard John Lynch works. And like, he ain't showing up to the office at 8:30 and going home at 6. Like, he's there bright and early and there well after the sun goes down. Maybe he was just made for it. And the media wasn't that natural to him. It's why I think Peyton Manning has kind of turned down a lot of media stuff to be the Monday Night Color guy. Like, he's not into all the fluff. He's actually more of a foxhole guy. But, you know, just the hours, like, it's a little easier. Like, even as a GM, you work crazy hours. It's not quite as many as the coaches. And I would love for it to happen, but it's sad to say it's probably only going to happen in basketball where the star players end up being a coach. Okay, let's dive into the Middlecoff mailbag. At John Middlecoff is the Instagram handle. And you got a question? Fire up in there. I'll gladly respond or answer your question here. Just thinking about the breaking news today is the Mexican pizza, which, depending on where you live, you know, Taco Bell is a staple out in the state of California. And the Mexican pizza was, you know, a top 2 or 3 item that they had. They're retiring the Mexican pizza November 5th. And I'd be lying two things. One, devastated. Not that I even eat that many that often anymore, but it's my favorite item. And second, I've already eaten dinner I ate at like 5, trying to be healthy this week after Vegas. But I'm thinking about just hopping in the car and going to Fire to get me a Mexican pizza for old time's sake. Big fan of the pod. Diehard Bengals fan here. Question about stocks. I hear you talk about your shares often, and you mention how you sold, bought during Corona. How do you manage your stocks? Are you using apps like Robinhood, Stockmaster, etc.? Thanks for your continued great content, and go Bengals. Joe Burrow, baby. I'm a Wells Fargo banker. They have a brokerage that just links right to my checking and savings account, and I just sell through them, and I get no fees. I can do whatever I want. So I don't use like a separate app. I just use my own banking, which is Wells Fargo Brokerage. Now, I mean, I've used E-Trade before when I was a lot younger, but in the last decade plus, I've just used the brokerage through Wells Fargo. It's really easy for me. So I don't know. I guess it depends who your banking is. Robinhood, people have had success there. I think they used to be a sponsor on the podcast. I don't think it matters. I think it's pretty safe now if it's a legitimate company. Fantasy question for the pod, bro. Would you have Odell or Chris Godwin for this year? That's a good question. I would say I love Chris Godwin. God, I didn't know that much about him till last year. I play a lot of daily fantasy. He's a baller. I would say this, though. You know, when you think that the Bucs, Mike Evans is a beast. Gronk is there now. We know Brady likes the other tight ends, and they still got O.J. Howard and Cameron Brait. Scotty Miller, this, you know, typical Belichick white receiver, Bowling Green, is actually on Tampa too, and he's been like blowing up. So has he become the Welker Edelman? You have to think Godwin might come back to earth a little bit. I hope I'm wrong. I would go Odell. I think that they are going to try. I mean, under Stefanski, I mean, Diggs the last couple years for the Vikings had like 15 touchdowns. So I don't see why. If you can run the ball, play action with Odell firing down the sideline, I think they're going to take a bunch of deep shots to Odell Beckham. That would be my gut reaction. Tough call, though. I mean, it's a tough call. I'll be honest. I never played fantasy my whole life. Part of it was I worked in the league. And I had people that worked in the league, scouts and stuff, that played big fantasy games. So it's not like fantasy was laughed about or was a joking, you know, stock. I just never did it. And then I've got my other podcast, we got a daily fantasy sponsor. And I don't know how you guys play year-long fantasy. Like, one of the reasons I always aspired to go to the NFL and away from college, I hated being tied to players. Now, I wanted good players, but I always liked the ability to cut players. And in college, you never could. In the pros, it's like a guy sucks, you get rid of him. In fantasy, once you draft a guy, especially if you used a high pick on him, you kind of have to ride it out, and he can have a crappy season. That's what I love about daily fantasy. You never get tied to a player. And we're going to have a daily fantasy league based on my other podcast, Haberman Middlecoff. Get it. Because I'm a huge daily fantasy guy. Year-long fantasy, to me, I don't have the patience. I don't know. But clearly, it's been good for the NFL's business, and a lot of you guys like it, but I don't know how you guys did it. Love the pod. First question, do you think that that Jamal Adams and the Seahawks defense will have a good year, and do you think the Seahawks will have a good year in general? Yeah, I think Seahawks are going to be good. I mean, I think there's a chance that we get three teams out of the NFC West. The Niners, Seattle, fighting for the division. And I think between the Rams and the Cardinals, I don't like the Cardinals as much. I don't believe in the head coach. He never won more than 7 games in college. I don't like their defensive coordinator, Vance Joseph. Now, I do like the quarterback. But when you factor in the division, I'm going to throw on Hard Knocks a little later. I haven't watched it yet. But one thing you see with the Rams is if they can protect Goff, big if, they have a ton of skill guys, right? Robert Woods, Cooper Kupp, both those guys caught over 90 balls. They love the Van Jefferson guy. They're going to be able to run the ball with Sean McVay in the scheme. Aaron Donald's probably the best player in the league. You got a shutdown corner. If, you know, 5 or 6 of the other guys can just be functional, I think there's a decent chance that the Rams, I mean, last year they would have won 9 games. So I think Seattle and the 49ers competing for the division championship. I think Jamal Adams could just be like defensive player of the year. Perfect fit, perfect scheme, motivated, crazy, you know, SOB, right? made for Pete Carroll. You know what Pete Carroll likes? He likes his guys to be a little crazy. Think of when they really took off, right? Earl, Sherm, beast mode. Like, dudes with some edge to them and talent. And they were kicking the shit out of everybody. I mean, they were beating people. I mean, they were destroying people on defense. Pete likes this stuff. All those years at SC, Maluga. Remember Maluga, Cushing, and Maluga, Cushing, and Clay? And it was like, oh my, is this the best college linebacking crew ever? Pete likes his guys on tilt. You know, Pete ain't looking for, you know, for every Russell Wilson. He ain't doing a bunch of choir boys. He likes a little edgy. Now, he likes smart edgy. Like, I mean, Cam and Richard. I mean, these guys were high-level guys. Bobby Wagner. But when the whistle blows between the white lines, he wants dudes to knock you out. Do you think the Saints have what it takes to make the Super Bowl this year? Why or why not? Honestly, I thought they did last year. I remember thinking they were the best team in the league. Then they played the Niners in that crazy game. I'm like, these are the two best teams in the league. They're going to play in the championship game. And remember the Niners in Seattle, like it came down to that last game. It's weird. The Niners were better in Seattle, but Seattle just matches up. Their games are just classic. I'm like, you know what? The Niners got a bye. The Saints are going to win two games, and they're going to play in the NFC Championship at Levi's. I'm like, I'm going to go to that game. And then they lost to the Minnesota Vikings. They lost to Kirk Cousins at home, and Breeze was bad. How did that happen? I thought they had it all. They had a dominant wide receiver. They had Kamara and Taysom Hill. I thought their defense was really good. For them to lose that game was just was a joke. Now, there's some rumors as I'm recording this that they might get Clowney. If they got Clowney to go with, you know, Cam Jordan, Davenport, Lattimore, their defense would be pretty solid. Then, obviously, offensively, if they figure out this Alvin Kamara contract situation to go with Michael Thomas, they signed Emmanuel Sanders. Yeah, I mean, I think they're clearly on paper one of the best teams in the NFC. But it's hard for me to get over that loss. I mean, that was a terrible loss. Hashtag Middlecoff mailbag. I believe the Bucs are making the playoffs as a wild card, but I'm not sold on them going to the Super Bowl or even the NFC Championship game. Do you think this will be the Eagles' dream team 2.0 in terms of not living up to the hype? Well, having lived through the Eagles' dream team, I'd say our biggest problem was Michael Vick. Not that Michael Vick wasn't good enough. He couldn't stay on the field. He got hurt. And he kept getting banged up. And also, that second year in 2011, coming off 2010, teams adjusted to him. Teams made a lot of just, they started, I remember we used to get all these nickel blitzes, and it used to throw Mike off. And you can't do that to Tom. Tom knows everything. Like, part of the dream team is Michael Vick was not an MVP anymore. Then we had other personnel issues. But if you got Tom Brady, who's a star in the NFL, if you have a good team and your quarterback is a star or just a top 10 guy, you're going to be good. So to me, they're actually going to be much better in theory come December and playoff time than they are early in the season. Early in the season, to me, this first month, going to be a lot of growing pains. Is he on the same page as Godwin? Is he on the same page as Mike Evans? How does Gronk look? What Leonard Fournette? How's the offense working? I forgot about Leonard Fournette to the Bucs. Quick take on Leonard Fournette to the Bucs. You know, I think that's a little hubris ego by the Buccaneers. Like, he had his rep, came out pretty clear. No one on the team liked him. I've heard this from multiple people, players and coaches. People were out on the guy. Like, it's a running back. You guys can find running backs. Why do you need Leonard Fournette? Like, you got a pretty good thing going. You signed Tom Brady and Gronk, like really high character guys who are Hall of Famers. Why do you want to bring Leonard Fournette? It'd be one thing if, like, Christian McCaffrey was out there and he was a bad guy, right? Or Alvin Kamara. You'd be like, okay, those guys, like, what, this guy, what are we doing here? You need Leonard Fournette? I didn't love that signing. I thought it was a little arrogant. Now, I think Bruce Arians would say, like, I'm used to troubled guys. I have no problem with them. But I was like, I'm cool with it at certain positions, but at running back? Like, there are too many normal human running backs in the league that could easily function. Like, you guys can't find, like, an Austin Eckler type? It's not that difficult. But, yeah, I think the Bucs will be Bucs-Saints first game of the year. That's a pretty sweet game. Can't wait. Appreciate everyone listening. Again, go to 3 and Out Podcast, iTunes, subscribe to that bad boy, and I'll talk to everyone soon. See you.